When we say animatronics, what we mean is a puppet, and they look so realistic. They have they're operated by like between 7 and 12 guys all at once, and they've got various methods of making them move and shake and snarl, bite and drool, and they look very real, these puppets, and the team of workers are creating a performance when they operate them. So in that regard, it's really fun.
That was Chris Pratt talking about his new movie, Jurassic World. What's the subtitle to it? It's Jurassic...
Fallen Kingdom.
We're going to talk about Jurassic World. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things today.
Wait, they use puppets? I'm very disappointed. Those aren't real dinosaurs?
I'm amazed that they did use puppets. Like, what's the point of
They're
using...
They're not puppets. They're animatronic, dinosaurs.
Anyway, we're here with our Mike Sargent is back on the podcast today. Hi, Mike.
Thank you very much.
There you go. And Bill McCuddy, as always. And
Never work with puppets.
And Bill Bregoli, as always.
I've been accused of being a puppet.
And I'll let you do your tagline at the end of the show, as always, Bill. But in the meantime, what is this? What number of Jurassic is this, Mike? This is
Technically, this would be Jurassic 5.
Jurassic 5.
And they did a really smart thing. They opened it internationally before it came here because they're expecting less than they were hoping for in terms of the opening weekend. So it's already made something like $450 million worldwide.
Yes, it has.
And that gives it some incentive. You know, think about this, Neil. They didn't used to do it this way.
Well, you know, I thought they did it for a different reason, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, there was never the momentum of the foreign market that drove this country.
True.
It was normally, it started here, and then the rest of the world was lucky enough to catch up. And you know what? Those days are over, folks.
But seriously, I'll throw this out to all three of you.
Yeah.
Why do audiences, why does anybody give a shit about this anymore? And I mean that.
About what?
About this, it's the same thing. It's like, gee, you know, the dinosaurs, the park reopens and the dinosaurs get loose and let's run from the dinosaurs. Like, watch the first or the second. They're all the same.
Oh, this first of all, Neil, this one's indoors.
This one's different, and it's really setting you up for the next two. This is setting you up for the next two. And here's the deal. Neil, it's a dinosaur movie. Dinosaur movies are a genre, you know, and these are the only dinosaur movies there are. So there's always going to be dinosaur movies.
Speaking of dinosaurs, there's 25 James Bond movies, and those are basically all the same movie, too.
Tell us how the plot is different from the other ones in this movie.
Well, in this one, it starts... with Jeff Goldblum, of course, warning that these dinosaurs should really be left to be destroyed by the volcano on the island in which they're inhabiting, because it's just upsetting the whole balance of nature. But there are these pro-dinosaur people. Bryce Dallas Howard is one of them.
Pro-dinosaur.
And the pro-dinosaur people...
Aren't those Republicans?
they're actually hired by a rich guy to go to this island and get as many as they can and bring them back to him. So, of course, on the island, there's a volcano because it's not enough pressure to have dinosaurs. You got to have a volcano, too. So that happens. They get the dinosaurs. They bring them back to this sort of evil scientist lair, giant building where there turns out that they've been double-crossed. And one of the rich guys is trying to sell the dinosaurs to the highest bidder. And they're all like international arms
stunners.
Weaponized. Because,
yes, they've weaponized the dinosaurs.
At what point do the dinosaurs go nuts and start everybody running
well,
from
come on, that's
running
the dinosaurs
from the,
running
whenever
from
there is a dinosaur.
All, let me guess, there's a cage that's infallible that they get out of.
No.
They've
created a super smart dinosaur. That's so smart that it can...
The Indosaurus.
Yes, the Indosaurus. So, I thought it was... I didn't... First of all, it's a dinosaur movie. So I go in with a certain expectation for a dinosaur movie. Will it be dinosaurs? Will it be fun? Will I like these characters? Will the dinosaur break out of whatever it is that he couldn't or shouldn't break out of? That's what I'm looking for in a dinosaur movie. If that's what you're looking for... That's your movie.
And I got to tell you, this trailer looked like the absolute worst of the summer. We talked about this on the CUNY show a couple of months ago when nobody had seen it yet. And I was just like, this looks so bankrupt, this series.
Right, well,
so
okay, but
seen,
wait. Last thing I want to say.
Have you seen all five of them?
I have.
But where would you rank this in the five of them?
I would say it's not as good as the last one.
Give us your Casey Kasem. Where in the top five is this dinosaur movie?
It's not as good as the last one, Jurassic 4, the reboot. But they're going in a different direction. I feel it's a good setup. I think it's Jurassic Park, the original, still probably the best. I'm probably in the minority that I thought Jurassic Park 2 was okay.
How are they going in a different direction?
I don't want to tell you the end of the movie, but they're going in a different direction now. They're setting you up for a whole new kind of dinosaur.
I'm telling you, they get into politics, and the Democrats run them for president in 2020.
All I got to tell you is, everything is about creating a universe, and there's a reason why it's called Jurassic World now.
Bill,
yes.
Would you recommend the movie, and where would you rank it amongst the five Jurassic movies?
Maybe I say number three, if I wasn't clear, by the way.
Probably, the third of the first trilogy was actually really good, but nobody remembers that one.
The one directed by, what's his name, the former effects guy?
Yeah. I can't remember his name either.
Yes. Okay, so
this one's one of the lower of the three. I got a little bored by the end because they keep chasing. Nothing new about it. They throw in a little girl so that the kids in the audience will have somebody to relate to. But the little girl's stuck in her room for part of the movie.
And we have Bryce Dallas Howard.
Bryce Dallas is in it, and she runs a lot too. That's basically what they stick her with it. Interestingly enough, Geraldine Chaplin is in this movie.
Yeah,
and
she looks like she's from a whole different movie.
But
for you youngins, now I'm going.
Well, actually, the scene between her and that little girl who tries to scare her was very cute.
So let's hear from Bryce Dallas Howard.
I really looked at Jurassic World as a once in a lifetime opportunity because I had at that point I had done a few movies in franchises that I thought was going to continue on, and they never did. And so to get to have that once in a lifetime opportunity twice is, honestly, it's pretty magical.
What movies is she talking about? Lady in Water was going to be a franchise?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that, Lady in Water 2.
Lady in
let's
Water.
Let's think about, no,
that,
let's seriously. Seriously, let's think about her career. I mean, I like her a lot.
You do? Wait, you do?
Yeah, she's Opie's kid. But I mean.
She's Richie Cunningham.
But don't you feel she's kind of interchangeable with, what's her name?
Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain, I think.
Why do we need
Jessica
them both?
Chastain.
Why do we need them both?
We should do all the roles she would have had.
We should do
dye your hair a different color. She could.
She is Jessica Chastain.
We should do a whole podcast on why do we need them both. Michael Paré and Michael J. Parks. It's the same guy.
Maybe she thought The Help was going to be a trilogy.
Yeah, The Help was going to be a big franchise.
I'm going to eat a shit pie in every movie.
Exactly.
Well, what did
The Help look? I like her. I'm glad she's in these, but I thought she was idiotic in the last one, running through the mud in high heels.
Yeah, now she runs through the mud
fought
in
for that,
boots.
By the way,
yeah, I know.
She fought for that.
Yeah, good for her.
I don't know.
She
I mean,
boots.
There's no
That's
real
how
bright.
She assured the franchise.
There's really no. I mean, she was in a really good episode of Black Mirror. I don't know if you remember that one where you get points depending on your social media grade. I don't know if you watch Black Mirror.
No, I've heard that I should.
Yeah, you should. It's like, very good. She's in an excellent episode.
She got her wish. That is a series, so she's okay with that.
But
I'm looking
at her filmography here, and I don't see any movie that could possibly be considered a
franchise.
All right,
since you're
movie.
Cheating and looking at her, what's her best movie? On that filmography, you're looking at the whole list. What's the best thing she's ever done?
Best in terms of
The Hug.
In terms of box office or best in terms
of
quality
as an actor,
film?
As an actor.
God, The Help? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess The Help would be her pinnacle. Yeah.
I guess The Help. She shines in that Black Mirror episode.
They could have done
though.
A sequel to The Help.
Wait, what about...
Where they all become rich black actors and they call it The Help's Help. And
wait,
it's the people
you
who
go.
Work for them.
I like
you
that.
She,
yeah, let's greenlight that.
That's the franchise she's been looking for.
The help.
And I'd
help.
Say the worst.
They
was
start hiring.
Was
white
easily
exactly.
Was easily Lady in the Water, which was the worst movie, like one of the worst movies ever.
All right,
I know why. She thought Terminator. She thought that was going to be a franchise. Terminator Salvation.
Yeah,
that must be the franchise she thought. Either that or Good Dick.
So she's got.
So anyway,
she's got fuck you money, even though she. Well, when Opie dies, she's got real fuck you money.
So before we move away from the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom conversation, if you're a fan of the series, would you say, well, let's not even say fan, because a fan of the series is probably going to go out and see it. If you're like okay with this Jurassic Park World series, you know, would you say
Depends. All right, I say it depends on how hot it is outside.
Neil, with the same question three times in a row, this is four.
I'm saying it's. I think that it's fun, and if you go to dinosaur movies, you go for a certain reason.
It's like a good summer ride.
Yeah, like going to horror movies.
All right.
All right. So
what else is opening?
All right. So there's a movie. Was it Izzy?
Izzy gets the bleep across town.
What's that?
That's the way I'm going to talk about it on the air Friday.
Izzy's driving across town now, right, with a police escort.
You could use the word on the podcast. I'm
a radio professional.
No, but what we're saying is what's interesting when you look for the title of this, it's on a marquee or anything. They do the traditional asterisk, ampersand,
Yeah, I mean, listen, there was a great Broadway play I saw with Chris Rock, and it was called The Motherfucker with the Hat. It was tremendous. And, yeah, they just said the
Neil,
I mean, they just dropped
it. Neil, we don't really like that kind of language on this podcast.
Well, that was the name of the play, you know?
This is about Mackenzie Davis, who was, most people probably know now from Tully, is... Her character is described as a hot mess. She wakes up after a one-night stand, drunk, and when she sobers up, she realizes that her boyfriend, not the guy she slept with from the one-night stand, but her boyfriend is engaged. Her long-term boyfriend is marrying somebody else, and he's having an engagement party, but it's way the bleep across town. So she has to find a way. At one point, she's on a scooter. She asks people for rides.
This is Ingrid Goes West.
Isn't it sort of the same thing? Just takes longer. And
the Aubrey Plaza movie?
It's more about the travel across. The thing is, it's just totally forgettable until the very end. They throw in some real meaning to the film, but by then.
So she doesn't get to the party until the very end.
Right.
It's all about planes, trains, and automobiles, or buses, subways, and bicycles.
There are a couple scenes that take place after she gets to the party, but. Those scenes they try to fill with import.
It also sounds like when that movie, which I brought up a few weeks ago, about the two girls that are trying to get to the beach in Far Rockaway.
Yeah, it's kind of a film trope.
You remember that one?
Sure.
It's not the destination, but it's the journey kind of movie. Yeah.
All right. So, what did you think of it?
It annoyed the hell out of me, to be honest with you.
What do you think of it, Mike?
Well,
get the fuck across town already.
Yeah, I saw the film with my young daughter, who clearly this is aimed squarely at, and it's sort of that. It's a very young female in L.A. You know, the kind of realizations she comes to, as Bill says, towards the end of the movie. It's like, you know, if you're older, okay, you get it. It was amusing consistently and not terrible.
So would you actually recommend somebody pay full price of the box to see this? See it when it comes on pay cable or Netflix? Or skip this thing altogether?
Go to a bootleg site?
Buy it for $3 off some person.
Get somebody to send you a link.
To be fair, I think that some of what it does we've seen before, but some of what it does we really haven't seen. And it really wouldn't mean something to...
The stuff we haven't seen is good?
Well, the stuff we haven't seen wouldn't mean much to us, but, you know, we're not the demo for this
film. You're recommending it to, like, a specific millennial? Demo.
Millennials, absolutely, yes.
Or like a tween?
No, more millennials. More millennials.
Fucking millennials. Like, everything else doesn't cater to them.
Really. Couldn't stand it.
Spoken like a non-millennial.
I say skip it.
And Mike is like, for millennials. Okay. Yeah. So the three of us, Mike, myself, and Bill Bregoli, saw a movie. It's a documentary by Eugene Jarecki, who's a really good documentarian. He's made some great documentaries in the past, called The King. And it's about Elvis Presley, and they get Elvis Presley's, a 1963 Rolls Royce?
That's right, yes, Silver Phantom.
1963 Rolls Royce, and they kind of drive it to different spots around the country where Elvis had been, Las Vegas, New York.
Well, they turn it into a movie studio, basically, because they get all of these people to sit in the back seat.
Well, Alec Baldwin's in the back seat.
The world's most expensive camera car.
But you got a lot of room in the back of the Rolls too, Senator. It's not like cash cab. I mean, you know,
tell me the story about how this was his car, because no one's ever seen him photographed in it. He's always in Cadillacs.
Well, they have a video of him. They have film.
I'm sure they do.
They don't really get into
it. Think
in the movie
of it as
how
the,
he bought the car,
because he was like a Cadillac guy.
Bought the car. They bought the car.
Yes, they did.
Right, but the movie Bill McCuddy does not tell you like how Elvis came to own this particular car.
Okay, well, I was just surprised that it was a Rolls Royce. That's all I'm saying.
So different people step in the car, like, and they give you their opinions. Right, and the movie's kind of like, I have to tell you, there's been a lot of documentaries and movies on the life of Elvis Presley, and you know,
but not the life of his car.
Well, the car is just, pun intended,
Remember the Saturday Night Live sketch where they had Elvis's jacket, and it was like, to one night only, Elvis's jacket. You don't remember that whole thing? It was like,
what's the rap? What? No, what's the rapper, Mike? Chuck D. That's in the movie.
He was a Fox News contributor.
Right, so yes, he has that line in the movie and he talks about that line in his song where he goes, "Elvis is a hero to most, but he didn't mean shit to me," or something
right,
like that.
Right.
And when I heard that line, I was not familiar with the song. I said, "Yeah, you know, I came of age in the like. I understand if you came of age." You were a teenager when Elvis hit, it was like new and revolutionary, and it was like, wow, this is really something interesting and different. I came of age during the Beatles, so, you know, to me, Elvis was, I could care less really about Elvis, and never really did it for me. And I think the movie makes some interesting points about how, you know, they make a whole thing about how, you know, Elvis was a hero and he was stealing basically all the black music, you know. He wasn't writing any of these tunes. He was doing stuff that, you know, black artists had written. And that, who's the guy from
the Colonel?
From the record label?
Well, the Colonel Tom Parker.
No, well, Colonel Tom Parker was the guy that managed Elvis. The guy that, in the
Sun Records?
Yeah, the guy.
No, I don't know his name.
Oh, Sam Phillips.
Yeah, Sam Phillips was looking for a white guy that could turn teenagers on, like black artists were not palatable in the 1950s, and Sam Phillips, which is addressed in this documentary, was looking for a white guy with good looks that could sing black music. So apparently Elvis walks into Sam Phillips' studio in this doc, they tell you in this documentary, and he starts singing like, you know, Frank Sinatra standard songs, and he's Sam Phillips.
See, that story's been told before.
Right, he's ready to throw him out, and then all of a sudden he starts singing, I don't know, That's All Right, Mama, and he said, the line in the movie is, he goes like, he goes, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm sorry. This is the kind of music I like, Elvis goes. And Sam Phillips goes, that's the kind of music I like. And then they kind of forge this partnership together. But a lot of this stuff I've seen before. Then there's a whole element of this movie that kind of talks about how Elvis is responsible for the fall of democracy in America, and he parallels it to Trump, and that whole thing.
Neil.
I'm telling you what the documentary is.
I know what it does, but I think that's supposed to be the metaphor. I don't think it's
I don't think it's metaphorical in the movie. And then there's like, what's that kid that's singing in the back of the Rolls, who's like, you know, like 8 years old, and she's...
In the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's kind of all over the place, but yes, watchable.
It weaves all over the highway. That's what you're saying?
But it's watchable.
It's watchable. What did you think of it?
Me, I thought, first of all, what I enjoyed about it is, again, I don't really care too much about Elvis, but he's fascinating. He means something very specific to me in what he represents, what you just said, that he is a white artist who could sing black and be palatable to white people. And what I thought Jarecki did well is contextualize just who Elvis was, why he became what he was, what it all meant, and what it meant to white America, what it meant to black America, what it meant to music, what it meant to, you know, the quote-unquote, he really talks quite a bit in the beginning about the American dream and what is the American dream? And it resonates to me today because, you know, we're in this time frame where people, you know, whole campaign is about a time with, you know, back when America was great. America was never freaking great. Not if you're black, you know. It also touches on
stealing from other cultures.
It's a cultural appropriation is the term I would use.
Yes.
And so he is a huge example of that. But at the same time, he's a fascinating character. So I thought he contextualized it well.
But even Chuck D said at one particular point in the movie, he says, listen, I don't blame Elvis.
Right.
You know, like Sam Phillips was looking to make some money. And that's what he was looking for.
Exactly.
And, you know, when he signed the guy and he got in.
Well, the other thing I'd like to ask Mike about is that I sort of think that black America gave Elvis a pass because there was no other way they were going to go mainstream without him. Like,
well,
there was this whole Chitlin circuit down in the South
that
Elvis came sort of out of and stole from. No one's ever said, oh, Elvis owes all of these songwriters like millions and millions of dollars. On the other hand, they're like, Elvis, if Elvis hadn't happened, we'd still be not today, not to 2018, but there was, he helped them break through in a way. Yes, no, maybe.
Well, you think Little Richard would have been able to play mainstream audiences had not been Elvis?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think two things I think are, one, that Elvis, I don't know that black folks gave him a pass so much as, you know, really what could they do? And at the same time, I think Elvis, you know, if you're a musician and if you love music, you know, you you got to in some ways acknowledge what he's done. But in terms of cultural appropriation, you know, I can liken him to Clint Eastwood, you know. Clint Eastwood, you know, was famous for doing a lot of things, and he wasn't always on screen. He's done some bad things to black folks on screen, but he's cool. Like, you kind of give it to him. He was cool. And I think Elvis was able to be cool.
Well, wait a minute. Fat bloated Elvis.
We have to back up for a second.
Sure.
The black community thinks Clint Eastwood was bad to them.
Well, I'm not saying that he was bad to them. I'm saying you talk about giving a pass, and I'm saying that, you know, Clint Eastwood has definitely had played characters that were not necessarily
politically correct.
Exactly. But he's Clint Eastwood. Like, he's cool, you know. So you kind of give him a pass.
I know what you're thinking.
One part of that black guy's shining moment.
Do you feel lucky, but, kid?
Right. Punk, all of that. All that.
You know, there's one part of that documentary that I really found interesting. I knew this story, but it was more detail on the story that I didn't know, which is that Ed Sullivan refused to put Elvis Presley on his show.
Of course, it was indecent.
And Steve Allen put him on, and then Ed Sullivan got killed in the ratings that week. Just absolutely.
Well, again, I think that story. That was the first time you heard that story.
No, but there's more detail.
Then Ed Sullivan insisted that they not shoot. They had to shoot him from the waist up or whatever.
Yeah. But the point is, everybody talks about Ed Sullivan, the Elvis appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show and shooting from the waist down, and that it electrified America. That, you know, people were watching Elvis. But if he was on a week before on Steve Allen, and Ed Sullivan got killed in the ratings, and everybody was watching Steve Allen. Why isn't that the story that everybody knows?
Because Sullivan was number one. You know, Steve Allen was doing
not that week.
No, not that week. That was an anomaly. That's what I'm saying.
What movie did he devote Sullivan the week that Steve Allen was on? He devoted his whole show at Sullivan to some
Lawrence Welk. No, I'm kidding.
To something. I don't know. Moby Dick.
Did he?
I don't know.
Elvis was in Moby Dick?
No. Sullivan devoted his entire show to some movie that was being released at the time.
Oh, I see. All right.
And
not an Elvis movie.
Not an Elvis movie.
Have you seen if we're talking about Elvis, two things, because you mentioned fuck you money. I heard that his daughter has gone through all her fuck you money. Did you read that just recently?
No.
Yes, she's out of her inheritance. She's done. It was in today's gossip column.
Wait, the estate still makes hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Her part, she's gone through. So I don't know if she's part of the estate anymore, but she had an inheritance.
Wow.
It was like $100 million or whatever it is.
The one who was married to Michael, Lisa Marie.
Yeah, Marie is
married to Michael,
is broke,
Jackson.
Basically.
Do you think do you think that kid that is technically, they say, Michael Jackson, Lisa Marie's daughter, do you think that there's any DNA of Michael Jackson in that kid?
Sure.
Do you?
I think Michael Jackson would definitely have, you know, used his DNA.
You think the kid is biologically somehow related to Michael Jackson? You think?
I think if there was some kind of artificial insemination that he was going to use, and the technology existed, he had the money to get it.
I'm going to say something that's going to stun you.
Uh-oh.
It's none of our business.
Okay.
This is true.
Yes,
this is true.
There you go.
This is true.
Well, no, I don't mean to be the final word on it. I'm just saying, like,
it's true.
Whatever his wishes were, he talked her into something, whether it was insemination or getting a...
Right.
Yeah, somebody who of donor sperm from somebody else or whatever. With that, we know way too much about way too many people now.
That's true.
This is
all right. So anyway,
so I think we should end the podcast on that note.
I mean,
forever. I don't think we should ever do this.
All right,
podcast.
Wait, last question on Elvis. Do any of you like any Elvis movies at all? Do you care?
The only good one. Okay. I mean, they're all terrible. Except, okay. I would say if you gotta watch one, Viva Las Vegas.
The fun ones, but he was kind of, what was the first one that was in black and white?
The first one was a drama. drama.
He was kind of good in.
Wasn't even singing in it, I don't think. You know, it was completely miscast. They didn't know it. Well, he sold his, you know, Colonel Parker, I mean, made him sign this contract, and he was making all these movies, and, you know, which is touched upon in the documentary.
You want to hear a great Colonel Parker story that no one else knows?
Sure.
Because my friend, I'm not going to mention his name, he's a concert promoter, and he knows the whole story, and they brought Elvis into this venue, and they had the deal with Colonel Parker. They got to give him $1 million check, and then he shows up, and then, so at the end of the night, my concert promoter friend and Colonel Parker are in an office, and a guy walks in and dumps maybe $400,000 or $500,000 on the desk. And the guy and my concert promoter friend goes, "What's this?" He goes, "Well, that's everything else. That's the sodas and the that's everything else. The pendants and the like, all the shit.
Merchandise.
And it was like merchandise. They poured it on the desk and he said, "Well, that's not part of mine." He goes, "No, we're partners. You get half." And he took his cane and he put the cane down Parker. The middle of the desk, Parker, and moved the two piles of cash on each side. Really? And that's how he split it. He goes, "Go ahead and take yours."
Wow.
And that's a true story.
Wow. So anyway, I think the movie The King, the documentary by Jarecki, it's kind of all over the place. It's not really focused on one thing, but it's kind of cool to see the different celebrities in the Rolls Royce.
Yeah, it's
Royce.
Fun to watch. I thought that was the point, though. It's texture. It gives you the texture of the town.
How many times does the Rolls Royce break down?
Once anyway.
The Rolls Royce is actually up on, it's being, at one point it's being transported somewhere. It's not even being driven somewhere. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I liked it. I don't think it's great, but I definitely think it's interesting. Would you agree, Mike?
Absolutely. I did like it. I like it.
Different take.
I thought it was respectful.
So, since we
Oscar
have,
contender before we leave this, because Jarecki is a guy who's had he's had it there before.
I don't think, but I do think it's decent.
Too light. Yeah. And too
79% rating on
and a lot of this stuff, as you said,
short list. Bet you $10 right now makes the short list.
I would take
and
you
I haven't even
that.
Seen it.
I take you up.
Do you know what the short list is, Neil?
What is the short list? What do you tell everybody?
Yes, you know that they come up with 10 titles before they actually nominate. Is it 10 or 15?
Oh, 15, I think.
Okay. Yeah, they come up with 15, and those are the ones that all the Academy really, really, really has to watch.
So Mike Sargent is a big Star Wars and Star Trek fan. I'm a big Star Trek fan, not a Star Wars fan, but there's some news here. Star Wars, Disney has announced that they are canceling the planned standalone Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi movie and the planned Boba Fett movie because of the disappointing box office returns on Solo, a Star Wars story. Well, at the same time, the folks over at Paramount, responsible for Star Trek, have announced 4 new Star Trek projects. A new series set at Starfleet Academy, a limited series whose plot details are currently secret, a limited series based around the Wrath of Khan story, and an animated series whose plot details are also not being disclosed.
And I'm not going to watch those either.
The Starfleet Academy sounds like the coolest idea of all of those. When you said all 4 of those ideas, I was like, oh yeah, the Academy, where the animal house of... And of course, they won't go in that direction.
But they actually kind of, in that first Star Trek reboot, Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto was, you know, as Kirk and Spock, they were kind of like, you know, it was kind of like Animal House-y antics. Pine was kind of screwing around and
drives the Corvette really fast.
You know, and Spock was kind of like, you know, too serious for, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Too cool for schools.
The downfall
not this school.
Of Star Wars versus the rise of Star Trek. I mean, I have some thoughts on it, but what's your opinion? Why do you think that this is happening?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Look, the last few... they're also going to... I hear now they're going to... Zachary Quinto said yesterday, look for an announcement any day that they're going to do another Star Trek...
which is going to be the last one. Yeah.
Movie. But, you know, I don't know. Listen, I think certainly as far as the Star Wars stuff... The disappointing box office on the Han Solo.
Can I predict the rest of what he's going to say? Where does this go? Where does it go? We've seen it all.
No, no. But the Star Trek thing.
Not that you're Regis, but like you.
No, the Star Trek stuff.
They'll be puppets.
Has not been all that successful as of the last like 10 or 15 years. The reboot that they did with, was it J.J. Abrams that did, that directed
yeah,
the first
yeah,
one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that did well. And then the second one didn't do really quite as well. That CBS All Access where you got to stream it to get it, I don't think that's doing fabulously.
Oh, got another season coming.
Yeah, they did, but I don't think it's not like, wow, you know. And then there was the Scott Bakula one that they did that didn't really go anywhere. And, you know, I don't know. So why are they coming out with four or five things? I mean, maybe Paramount is just throwing darts on a board and seeing what sticks.
Hey, it's a lot easier to announce a movie than to actually make one.
So you just think a lot of this shit's never going to happen?
Yeah.
I think
could well happen.
That's your take?
Yeah,
that's my interesting take. What's
your take? I also think if you own a franchise and you're looking at new audiences coming around every 5 years, you're just like waiting for the next time to look. I mean, we've been to the Spider-Man web well so many times. It's like crazy. I think that if you own it, you do something with it instead of nothing.
Well, here's the thing, Mike. You know, okay. You asked me what I think of this.
Yes.
The last two Star Trek movies, and I've talked about this extensively in the past, are not true to the Star Trek prime directive, to use a Star Trekism. You know, they're action movies where the television series, both the Next Generation and the original series, and
yes, were deep thought
parts of Voyager
exercises.
And Deep Space Nine have intellectual plots. They were written by great science fiction writers. I mean, the great episode, City on the Edge of Forever from the original, was written by
Harlan Ellison.
Right, Harlan Ellison. And, you know, some of those Next Generation episodes, the one where he lives the whole, where Picard lives the whole lifetime in like 20 minutes with the flute. I mean, these are brilliant concepts. They're like Rod Serling type written Twilight. They're great. And those last two Star Trek movies, to me, are not Star Trek movies. They're just blow up action bullshit with no cerebral quality to them. Where if you look at the Next Generation movies, where the space-time content, this is such a geeky conversation, but the one where they discover
I needed to take a nap.
Continuum, that was a really good movie. It had action. They crashed the Enterprise on a planet, but there was also that component to it that had that cerebral, thought-provoking aspect that satisfies Star Wars fans, which Star Wars fans are not looking for that aspect, but the Star Trek fans are, and I think that the last two movies are a betrayal, and it goes in hand with what Hollywood is doing of sacrificing plot for just action stuff. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Mike, but
I think it's a very insightful thought, because I do agree. Why I think this is happening is for several reasons. One, the difference between Star Wars and Star Trek is Star Trek is science fiction, Star Wars is
science fantasy.
It's space fantasy. That's what it is, straight up. Science doesn't have to make any sense. It's midichlorians. But with Star Trek, part of what Star Trek's ethos is that they are morality plays. It's always been that way. And that's what good science fiction is. It has something to say about the human condition. Fantasy is just fantasy, fun.
Right.
There's nothing to it.
Right.
So it doesn't have the substance. Lucas, on the other hand, had stuff he was trying to say in that genre. Even though episode 1, 2, and 3, in many ways, was disappointing, if you really look at what he's talking about there, he's got all this subplot and the this and the that and the Republic and he's got all this science fiction stuff going on in the background. That's what, you know, at this point he wanted to talk about. It didn't work, okay, but that's what he wanted to talk about. Where they're going is, like you said, where the Star Trek movie started to go. Action, which is not what Star Trek is. Not to mention the fact that, you know, if we're talking about like what Bill McCuddy said, you know, if you have, it's all about a universe and you know, creating a universe. There's the Universal Universe and there's the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe. It's all about universes, so you can have multiple films. And Star Trek is, they're the godfather of universe. They've had 5 series. That's hundreds. That's almost a couple
I'm just saying
thousand.
I like a little more intellectual meat.
Well, that's I'm saying. That's why
as
Star Trek.
To just let's blow up.
But let's be honest. How much intellectual meat does Neil Rosen really need?
Well, that's a whole other conversation. But you know, Next Generation to me My wife and I would be like riveted to those episodes. After they got past a mediocre first season,
right,
say the middle of the second season of The Next Generation, they hit their stride. And
wait, is that really, Kate Mulgrew as the captain? Or
no, that's Voyager.
That's Voyager.
Oh, okay.
So
that was lost in space.
I think there's another factor, too. The fantasy also appeals to a lower demographic. Okay.
What appeals to a lower demographic?
Fantasy.
Yes, it does.
Fantasy feels to a lower demographic. Yes. Science fiction is more intellectual. And it's witnessed by what happened with the Asian actress who had to get off social media because she was being trolled so much by all these racist, sexist pigs. And even the same thing happened with the guy who plays Finn. You know, he was getting a lot of it.
Wait, which Asian actress? The one from Solo?
Kelly Tran. The one from the last episode eight.
Oh.
Episode 8. Kelly Tran and John Boyega both quit social media. It's similar to what happened to, what's her name, from Ghostbusters, okay?
Yeah.
If that's what it takes to get people to quit social media, it's worth it.
But I'm just saying, it's a different kind of audience.
Who quit social media Leslie Jones.
She quit. She came back, but she was getting trolled so hard by these.
Well, that was also with her Olympics coverage and stuff like that.
Straight up horrifying.
They did a lot of racism. And I'm saying the kind of fans of Ghostbusters, Star Wars. Unfortunately, now it didn't used to be that way, but that's what it attracts now, and that's part of why I think so. Solo. You know, there's just nothing there. It wasn't about anything.
Solo was a miscast effort.
Absolutely.
We talked last time about how if they did a movie with Glover, that would be a cool movie.
Before we move on from Star Trek, I'll just say that I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan, too.
I was very disappointed with the last two full-length movies, and I'm not looking forward to another full-length movie.
Well, I thought the last one was better than that, the reboot of Wrath of Khan. And I don't know why they're making Wrath of Khan into a mini-series. There's so much in the
canon. The
original
series was great, and The Next Generation was even greater.
Did you watch the animated?
All right,
All right, moving on.
Let's speak to the five people still listening to this podcast.
Really. All right, so there's some other movies out there.
Wake up.
Such a Bad Guy is a movie that...
I saw on HBO yesterday, which I'm going to recommend. It's Dabney Coleman, who always played like the evil guy in every movie from War Games
to Nine to Five.
Right. And he got all of the... He's such a great storyteller. He's a Texas boy who at age 27, he meets Zachary Scott. Do you know the actor Zachary Scott? So he's been in lots of old movies. He was a friend of their family.
Zachary Scott is like a 1940s film actor.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. So I'm saying. So he met him as a young man, and he decided to go to New York overnight and get try to be an actor. So Dabney Coleman, who has never been a leading man, has always been like a strong, good-looking when he was younger, like kind of asshole, which is exactly what he was in. There's a great his whole history with Tootsie, with Dustin Hoffman meeting with him and saying he's a great actor, and then Sidney Pollack. He was supposed to play Coleman, the part Sidney Pollack played in Tootsie.
Oh, really?
Which was the agent.
So what happened?
And he kept saying, "I don't want to do this. It's not going to be funny." And there's a bunch of stories he tells about how no one, when they were making Tootsie, thought it was funny.
Wow.
The crew wasn't laughing, what's the crazy good-looking blonde that's in it?
Jessica Lange.
Yeah, Jessica Lange goes to Dabney one day and goes, "This is a piece of shit." like the crew doesn't think it's funny.
Rave about the movie Tootsie, and I have to tell you that I don't think it's a terrible movie, but I don't find it to be as funny as some people put it on the great comedies of all time.
It's on all the great comedies.
I mean, I think Bill Murray's parts are funny.
Did you like Mrs. Doubtfire better?
I did not like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Well, anyway, this is worth seeing. It's called I'm Not a Bad Guy After All, or I'm Not Such a Bad Guy, and it's streaming everywhere, but it's on HBO for free.
Those
and
I
recommend it. Dabney Coleman is... What I would like to see happen is... over here, Neil. I'd like to see... his little head wanders, and it's so cute. He's like a bobblehead. What I'd like to see
that's
is like a series.
That's what I love about doing this podcast. I think
it would be all I'm going to say
great.
Is
he's great.
I comments. Think it would be really interesting to have a series of documentaries of people who aren't the stars but are the second bananas, like Dabney
it's
Coleman,
William Demarest,
the second guy, the like
you
the
know
co-stars.
What would be interesting? Stephen Tobolowsky would be one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great character actor.
Yeah, he is.
And really cool storyteller himself.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I've met him too. This is we're talking about the
we're
guy
Facebook
from
friends. We're friends.
We're talking about the guy from Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Yeah, well,
Ned?
Ned.
Right. The guy was it Bing? What's the line that he used every time he was like he said,
oh yeah, right.
He always says that people right. come up to him and they say that line when he steps in the puddle and he's like
very
that
cool
guy's
guy.
Everything, man.
Yeah,
and he works a lot.
Guy.
He was a great
he's
working
in
actor.
Everything. That's yes. true. Yeah, that would be well, I think
I would actually
whole,
watch
a
Dabney
that would maybe
thing.
Incorporate four or five of those character actors. Not one whole movie on it, but like...
I think
well, this
TV
is
series.
An hour and 10 minutes with Dabney Coleman, and I'm going to tell you, you're going to learn stuff about movies that you like that you never knew before. That's
I
all
think,
I'm saying.
And it's
I
on
think
Netflix?
You should pitch
HBO.
That concept to
it's
TNT.
On HBO. Okay, it's called Not Such a Bad Guy.
Serious.
Okay.
Second Bananas.
We also, I'd like to talk for a moment about it. I'd like to ask you about this, Mike, Bill, and Bill.
Let's make short work of it, Mike.
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, it was, according to Mike Sargent, it was approved today that the sale of 20th Century Fox, Disney's going to buy 20th Century Fox.
Yes.
On the heels of last week, AT&T buying Time Warner. It's now going to be called AT&T Warner. They're dropping the time. And I'm just wondering, you know, we touched upon this last week a little bit, but I'd like to touch upon it a little bit this week as well. Do you think that it's going to make any kind of difference in terms of the content that's being put out there, you know, once this thing, these things get up?
Not in this day and age where everything's driveled down to just everything looks alike. But, like, there was a time when 20th Century Fox meant something different than Disney. They were completely different. You know, one made Cleopatra and almost went broke, and the other was doing Son of Flubber across town at the same time. So this is not the same mentality these two a million years ago. Now, I'm not sure it really matters.
You know, I think it doesn't matter. What I do think, the change that I think will come from this is, you know, I think we're in, I just read the phrase the other day, but it makes sense. We're in what will be looked at in history as peak TV time. This is... TV has hit its peak. It's the best it's ever been.
I agree. It's
the best
great.
It's ever been. It's on a whole other level.
Handmaid's Tale, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's on a whole other level. Television shows, and there's so
West
much...
Westworld, completely...
So much out there, okay?
Impossible to decipher.
As it consolidates, and as more of the content makers own the platforms that you get the content on, I think that will change. You know, I think even Netflix is reining in what they do and changing what they do. I think... We've got another.
Well, they're not
two.
Making any money,
right? And well, they didn't have to for a long time. They just had to keep all their customers.
Everything has to make money eventually.
Yeah, well, they have to keep all their subscribers. That's their thing. Is they got to keep their subscribers. They got to make sure they got to keep feeding.
You realize when you say that everything good is on television, you're really just talking about the delivery platform and not the product itself.
Absolutely,
the product itself is better, but
it is.
When you say. This is the heyday of television. That just means the better ideas are showing up on a screen that's in our house instead of the one that's down that we pay 20 bucks to get into.
I disagree.
That's absolutely true. It's just the delivery device.
It's not just
no, because a movie.
I'd go to a theater. I'd go to a theater to watch Handmaid's Tale if
you
that's
would.
Where
no,
it
can.
Was.
You can't.
Because
it's a TV
of course
Handmaid's
you can.
Handmaid's Tale was a movie. Okay,
right.
Many. I did the
yes,
junk.
No, no. I
Natasha Richardson,
all the junk.
Robert Duvall and Faye Dunaway.
I didn't mean that.
But
I meant like
me. It was 2 hours and it sucked. And Handmaid's Tale, you can unfold that same Margaret Atwood movie, season one is that whole book, over a, you know, it was a 10-hour thing. You have breathability in a television series where you get 90 minutes or 2 hours in a movie to tell a story where you could just go on for 5 seasons. I mean, the Americans.
No one's disagreeing with that. What I'm saying is that everybody.
The quality, the writing
there
is
aren't
better.
Studios, there are content providers now.
Correct.
And where that content shows up, 9 times out of 10 that's good, is on your computer or on your television screen at home.
Okay, well, let's
There's
just
still
call it
the
home
other 10%, like.
What's in the theaters?
But Disney and Fox aren't in the movie business anymore.
No.
They're in the content
creation.
Business.
I agree with you.
Okay, so.
That's what I'm saying. When I say that, I'm saying that's what's going to change. The landscape's going to change. We're still in that. I still can say we're in a peak TV because TV you know, even though television, we don't call it a monitor and it's this, it's that, but what is generally seen as home entertainment, TV, what you
right.
watch at
There's
home.
Stuff that's created what, specifically
so for
home,
you at home
as
viewing.
Opposed to
exactly.
Jurassic so I, World,
exactly.
which is created
exactly.
to be shown
right. and
first
not a
in
series.
A movie theater.
And it's not a series.
Right.
You know, I'm not even talking about the movies that they make. I'm just talking about series.
I'm with you. There's so many great series that are going on.
TV's never been greater than it is now.
That AMC, the stuff that's on AMC. I mean,
all of them.
Incredible.
All
and
of
even
them.
If you want
to, that's what I think's going to change.
Even if you want to go to, like, not an intellectual, like, even Walking Dead is great. You know, I mean, it's just stuff that where I could just keep reading. Ozark's coming back. I think that's tremendous with Laura Linney and Jason Bateman. I mean, these are just smart stuff. It's not like where I think that the movie business, as a like Bill McCuddy said something to me the other day, which I thought was really interesting. It's like the summer movies are paying for the studio's Oscar movies. You know, that's paying their
yes,
tab.
That's
but, you know,
true.
Whereas... You know, and their
that was a very smart thing I
the
said.
The big yes. money that's being put by the studios into these movie theater stuff is action-driven things, whereas the series, I mean, Ozark is not, which, by the way, you should check out Ozark. It's a great show on Netflix.
I love Jason.
You know, and I mean, it's not an action thing. It's just, it's a little like Breaking Bad, but I mean, it's about a family that gets chased out of Chicago and is down in the Ozarks, and they're in the money laundering business. It's really. Have you seen Ozark?
No, but I have my money laundered at a dry cleaner up.
City Cleaners.
They actually tell you.
You know, Neil, you're really at the forefront of creating the breakdown between movie and television. Because you've been doing something for the last 10 years in this podcast and on television that would never have happened 20 years ago.
Which is talking
you
about.
You always ask when someone's seen a movie whether it's something they should pay to see on the big screen or wait until it's on television.
Right. And sometimes
and that's never, ever happened. Do you remember any time when Siskel turned to Ebert and said, I'm going to really enjoy this when it comes to TV, but I can't recommend it now as a movie?
Well,
so
a movie-
that, no, I'm not blaming you specifically. I'm just saying we're all having that conversation
well,
now.
The thing
everyone
is-
looks at Rotten Tomatoes and goes, gee, should I see that this weekend or should I wait until it comes on television?
Well, here's the thing, man. You know, you want to take your family to see Incredibles 2, okay? So it's, what is it, like $18 a ticket, you know? So it's like,
it's 30 if you go to the IMAX. IMAX 3D is $30 now.
Okay, so the whole night out to take your four kids with the popcorn, which is and the soda and the candy, which is really where the movie theater is making the money. It's like about $125 evening, you know?
Easily.
Why didn't have kids?
Where you could rent, or do you wait?
You could rent kids.
Do you wait for 6 months when it's on demand for $4.99 and people have big screen TVs, you know, 60, 70 inch TVs, and you watch the thing
absolutely
for $4.99.
Right. No, we've been having that conversation for 10 years.
To, you know, so I don't think, I think it's a very valid point. Do you go to see Jurassic Park World and spend, you know, all that money to take the kids and the family, or do you wait a few months and see it on
and
demand?
Thank God the movie business is still going to create things that we want to go and see in a communal. But I would bet you, if you ask these millennials we've been talking about through this episode, whether that's how we're going to go in 50 years, it's probably not.
Listen, my daughter does something that a lot of kids do, and it shocks me. I'm watching something on
sleeps
a big
with a guy on the first date.
That's not nice. No, I'm watching something on a big screen television. And she'll be sitting on her computer and just watching it on her computer on that 13-inch screen. And I say, listen, we have Apple TV. I could just literally put this up on the screen for you and you could watch it, you know, with the great sound system and the whole thing. And she says, no, I'm fine.
Well, my daughter, who doesn't sleep around as much as yours, apparently, looks...
That's really not nice.
No, I'm just kidding.
My daughter has the same boyfriend for 5.5 years.
When has McCuddy been nice?
No. My daughter watches everything. She doesn't believe we have a TV. Doesn't understand why we have a television.
Millennials.
We're
don't...
sitting now, we should tell people, in my living room or my media room, and there's a TV here. And my daughter is constantly in her bedroom watching everything. She streams everything. She watches everything.
Yes.
I'm telling you, I said 50 years a couple of minutes ago.
Yes.
And 20
well,
years from
talk
now.
Talk to millennials. I work with interns and people that are millennials. They don't have cable. They don't watch television. But yet, like my daughter, they know all the shows.
We can only pray they listen to podcasts.
They have Google Fire Stick, or they have Apple TV, or they just get these
or
passwords.
Or they watch YouTube.
And they know, right, they know all the shows, but they're not paying for cable. They're
right.
just not. So I don't know what's going to happen. All right, what's opening next week? unless you guys want to talk
Sicario.
You want to talk about Unsane or Damsel? You guys saw Damsel?
I saw Damsel.
I saw Damsel.
I talked Damsel.
I hate Damsel.
All right, well,
I hate
Bill Brigoli. Let me hear the hateful first.
Bill Brigoli, tell us about Damsel before we'll close it out with
Damsel. Well, Robert Pattinson plays this frontier man who travels.
Well-to-do frontier man.
Who plays?
Robert
Pattinson. Oh, you've
Robert
heard
Pattinson.
Of him.
When you think Western, you think Robert Pattinson.
Yes.
And in the beginning of the movie, he's in a boat, and he goes ashore, and there's a tiny pony in that boat. And then he meets a guy and eventually goes to this wacky Western town full of wacky kinds of people. And his whole aim is to marry the love of his life, played by Mia Wasikowska. And he does eventually, but it's all about the journey to do this. Of course, she's...
What a journey.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
And, yeah, and everybody...
This movie thinks it's so much better than it is.
Yeah, everybody's trying to be so damn quirky that I got annoyed.
Did anybody
of
note direct this?
Two brothers.
The Zellner brothers.
Yeah, Zellner brothers.
And who play parts
Matt
in the movie
and
as
Nathan.
Well.
Okay.
Well, okay. I didn't hate it as much as
you hated it.
I hated it.
You hated it.
You hated it.
New York Times liked it.
I couldn't stand it.
All right. I didn't hate it. I what I appreciated about it
was...
Wow.
No gray area on that one.
It was, to me, sort of an homage to a bunch of it.
To really shitty movies.
No. It was Sergio Leone, the Coen brothers, there were a lot of things.
What's the real thing than an homage?
All right, well, you know.
Is there any Quentin Tarantino?
This is the Coma brothers. It's not the Coen brothers.
Can I tell you what I thought?
All right.
I thought that Robert Pattinson, who I'm not necessarily a fan of, I thought he was pretty good. I thought particularly the scenes between him and Mia Wasikowska could have been really bad, but I thought they did a pretty good job. And it's an interesting film in that it does some things you don't expect. You know, it starts out, you think one character's the
protagonist. Yeah, I expected it to be good.
Okay, the protagonist.
Mike always has a kind word, always finds the
well, listen, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be the first to tell you, it's got like 78% on Rotten Tomatoes.
79!
People are loving this.
That's
thing.
Right.
That's but right. I didn't see it. I didn't see the same movie.
Wow. All right. Well, so Bill Brigoli hated it.
I didn't hate
Bill McCuddy hated it.
I liked it.
You could actually recommend
it. By the
it.
Way, for the record,
hey, so Mike,
it's interesting.
Know, do you pay full price at the box office for this, or do you wait until it comes out on HBO?
It depends on how you
HBO.
Like to see your Westerns, you know? I mean, how often do you get to see a Western in a theater with an audience anyway? So,
that's true.
Does that mean anything?
One time too often, as far as I'm concerned with this film.
You know, I don't know. So, just a question on what you mentioned, Bill, because I do think it's interesting what Neil says all the time about seeing movies on the big screen. When, you know, every now and then, of course, they're going to show like some movie, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey, they're going to put it on the big screen.
Yeah,
do you
they
go?
Just did that a couple of weeks ago. That was the anniversary.
Yeah, yes, they did.
The remake.
So, do you go?
Just
a remastered version.
No, they changed. They didn't add any scenes or anything, but they changed the tint and they did all kinds of
they digital put it back to its original color
and aspect ratio, I think.
Yes.
But whatever.
Yes, they did. But do you go to those kind of things and do you care? Do you have any desire?
Yeah, sure.
To see?
I love to see things on a big screen.
Listen, if you take The Godfather, let's say Coppola decided to make another Godfather film, okay?
Wow.
Which I'm just coming up with this. I mean,
he's not gonna remember. We were in Brooklyn at the same thing. I raised my hand and said something about Godfather 4, and he didn't even let me finish the question. He's like, "There's no Godfather 4." Remember that?
But just let's say they wanted.
Do you have sound for that?
This one's set in between the period where I don't know. They just come up for whatever. They come up with a Godfather 4, and Coppola's directing it, and you know.
It would
Puzo's,
be for Netflix.
Puzo's dead, but let's say there was a script by
Dude,
Puzo.
Dude, seriously, it would be for Netflix.
Well, here's
That's
what
true.
I'm saying.
It would be.
That's
it
who'd pay the money.
Out in theaters,
exactly.
I would not want to wait till it came out. I would want to see that at on a big screen. I would, you know, there are movies that I don't want to wait till they come out.
That's a good point because Escape Plan 2 went straight to Blu-ray.
Blu-ray.
Yes, it's coming out like this week or next week.
Is anybody still buying that?
Well,
Blu-ray?
That's what I'm saying.
Guess we're going to find out.
It went straight to DVD, Blu-ray. Escape Plan 2, Sylvester Stallone and Dave Bautista. And it couldn't get a
because there were
release.
So many unanswered questions from Escape Plan
I'm just
1.
Saying, like, how bad is that it couldn't even come out?
And what's that movie you love, Bill? where they run around, they keep making, where they run around the house, the apartment building, and they keep making more of them. The guy is shooting people. It's like a video game. He's running around the apartment building, hostile.
No, the Korean thing.
Oh,
that
that's
was
fantastic!
Like, yeah, that's awesome.
That's fantastic. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, they keep making
more. My God, they two of them. It's great. Yeah, it's great. As a matter of fact, RoboCop was a ripoff. The new RoboCop was a ripoff for that movie.
I think we're talking about two different things. The Korean thing we're talking about is what the hell is the name of that?
I'm trying
thing?
To remember.
He starts at the top of the building and he comes down. He has to get out.
Yeah,
he's got to find his way down.
I'm talking. I know that movie. I'm talking about the movie. Where, I think it's called Hostiles. The guy's in the building, and he's got to get out of the building, and the whole thing takes place. You don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
I don't know what I'm talking about either.
People love this about our podcast.
What do we do every week, Bill McCuddy?
We babble incoherently about things we have no knowledge of.
We do. And we also,
watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
And what's coming up next week, Bill Pagoli?
And I disparage members of the Rosen family, and I shouldn't because they're all lovely people.
That's right. And Sicario Day of Soldado comes out next week, and also something called Uncle Drew, which I know very little about.
We might take next week off.
Ant-Man and the Wasp come out next week? No?
Ant-Man and the Wasp
is Friday, July 6th.
By the way, for some strange reason, I'm still watching Westworld, which all I can defend it is by saying is that every week something interesting happens in an otherwise incomprehensive hour. If you're doing the same thing, follow me at BillMcCuddy.com and tell me on Twitter why I should be watching
this. If you've never watched the TV series Westworld, was the first season, was that comprehensible as opposed to the second season?
Yeah, well, what's ironic about this season is that everybody's saying on social media, oh, so many questions have been answered from the first. I don't know any of those answers. I'm not following what they're talking about, but something compelling and cool happens every week in this show.
Right, this is a show.
None of you are watching second season.
You can't binge it. You
get to the first every week.
All right, so anyway, we could follow Mike Sargent at
Mike on Screen.
Mike on Screen.
That's me on Twitter, and that's me on Instagram.
And we could follow Bill McCuddy on
At Bill McCuddy, and friend me on Facebook. I'm not up to 5,000 yet.
Bill
I would
does
love
not
that.
Have a lot of friends. And, yes. He would like some more friends. And you can follow me at Neil Rosen Apples. And once again, Bill Bregoli.
You can't follow me or I'll put out a restraining order.
There you go.
He's done it before.
You can follow us and we'll get the messages to Bill Bregoli. And thanks for sitting around talking movies. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.